Mikey, beautiful. Thank you so much for that introduction. There were so many errors in that introduction. But the sentiment was beautiful, and I understand what you were saying, and I really appreciate it. And your parents should live and be well until 120. This year is in their honor. Amen. And in honor of your grandniece, or your great-granddaughter, your great-niece, and everyone. It's beautiful to see everybody here before Pesach. And the way the style this year goes is I advertise it as 34 new things to say on the Haggadah. I'm always conflicted how fast to go, because then you can't write it down, and then what was the point? And the style is I try to change the style of each of them, so everybody gets something. Depends what you like. Everybody gets something. There's a little bit here for everybody. And here we go. I don't really repeat from previous years. This is all new stuff just to share with you what's out. It's amazing. The Haggadah is endless. There's always new stuff to tell about it. So the Haggadah begins, and every good Haggadah starts with the search for the Chametz, the Bedikas Chametz. And the search for Chametz, it's a funny thing when you think about it. It's like you're supposed to be looking. It's a metaphor. Looking for the Yetzer Hara, right? The darkest part of your soul. And you're looking around to discover it. And when you think about the fact that we've turned it into a celebratory event, you have kids there, you have the feather and the spoon, and everybody has a great time at it. But it's a terrible event. It really is there to find all your sins, everything that you're a mess about, and to bring it out. And then to have everybody celebrate that is a very strange thing. And I'm trying to wonder why we turned it into we make a bracha. Bracha is usually an indicator that something is a positive thing, not a negative. So I heard this podcast, and if everybody's ever listened to Jocko Willink. Jocko Willink is a Navy SEAL. Guy's amazing. Guy's incredible. One of those, like, he just like eats training and discipline for breakfast. So listen to this quote that he had said. So one of his subordinates came over to him, and the subordinate said to him, he said, I already know what you're going to say. And I asked, what am I going to say? And he said, you're going to say good. That's what you always say. When something is wrong or going bad, you just look at me and say good. And I said, well, that's how I operate. Mission got canceled? Good. We could focus on another one. Didn't get the new high-speed gear we wanted? Good. We'll keep it simple. Didn't get promoted? Good. More time to get better. Didn't get funded? Good. We own more of the company. Didn't get the job you wanted? Good. Go out, gain more experience, and build a better resume. Got injured? Good. You needed a break from training. Got beat? Good. We learned. Unexpected problems? Good. We have to figure a solution. When things are going bad, don't get all bummed out. Don't get startled. Don't get frustrated. Look at the issue and say, good. And that, to me, is the Bedikas Chametz. You got to take stock of where you're at, what your flaws are, where your gaps are. Once you find them, yeah, is it traumatic and is it difficult? Of course. But good. Now you know what it is you're going to work on. Now you know what your trajectory and your goal is over the whole Pesach, over these 8 days, what you want to begin to excavate and work on during this time. So that's good. And that's why we make the Bedikas Chametz a celebratory thing. Just one for Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Reb Chaim Kanievsky, who passed away 2 weeks ago. Reb Chaim told his children when they were emptying out the cabinets to check for chametz, they said, be very careful where you put the dishes when you take them out. Put them back carefully. He says, because the search for chametz is rabbinic law. Not distressing your mother, that's deoraisa. That's from the Torah. And one ought to be careful and sensitive with all of Pesach. Not lose the forest for the trees. And be careful to be sensitive and keep in mind that what we do impacts other people, and to have everybody in mind. One more for Bedikas Chametz before we continue. You know, you ever think it's silly that you look for the Chametz and you already know where the stuff's going to be? So what's the point? Now, listen, what other solution do you have? If you close your eyes and put it somewhere, you run the risk of not finding it, which is a bigger problem. Or you could outsource and have somebody hide it for you. But the truth is, we hide it and we know where it is. And it always seemed a little bit silly, but maybe it's supposed to be a little bit not as serious. Says the Chabiner Rav. This insight's from the Chabiner, one of the greatest rabbinic geniuses of the last 100 years. He's one of those people I consider on the list of the top 5 most underrated. So the Chabiner Rav says the following. He says, you know what the source is for using a candle for looking for chametz? The Talmud in Psachim says it's learned chipus, which means to search in Hebrew. Lechapes. To search comes from the word chipus when they were looking for the goblet that was stolen from Yosef. Joseph's goblet was stolen, and they were looking to see if the brothers took it. The word chipus is used there as well. That wasn't really a search. They knew they were going to find it. Says the Chabiner Rav, that's why we're good with putting chametz we know we're going to find. Because the very source comes from a place where the search was fake to begin with. where they knew they were going to fart. He knew the goblet was going to turn up because he planted it there. And therefore, that's fascinating that that is the search for chametz is also the same search from the story of Yosef itself. Okay, let's start the Seder. So you get this Seder overview. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yakatz. You get the, why do we do this? We don't do this on Rosh Hashanah. We don't do this on Yom Kippur. We don't do this anytime where we sit there and read out the table of contents before we begin. I remember reading a book called Brain Something by Marilyn Vos Savant. She had the highest recorded IQ in the world at the time. A columnist, and she writes, she answers people's questions. So she wrote that whenever, this was before Waze, whenever she would set out on a journey, she would go on a high building, look out everywhere, get the full bearing, and then she's ready for the details. And I think in a sense, that's why we do this idea of getting the bird's eye view. You could very easily miss the whole point of the story if you're lost in individual segments. You got to keep your eye on the bigger picture. You know, similar to Purim. You know how Purim, we took a step back, and on Purim, you have to unravel the whole Megillah. Why do you unravel the Megillah? Because you can easily miss God in the story if you're not watching the whole thing. I think the same way that the narrative of Egypt, you could miss God's hand from beginning to end if you don't see the whole thing. So we start the bird's eye view, and then we dive in. We go one after the other. Let's go next. The Rebbe of Piazetna. I'm going to announce some of the new hot Haggadahs of the year. If you're looking for a good English Haggadah this year, by the way, good English Haggadah put out by Art Scroll is the Gerer Dynasty Haggadah. Great little nuggets, family friendly. You could use them. They're wonderful. I recommend it. The hot one this year also, I haven't gone through it yet, so it's probably going to show up on next year's Haggadah series, is Rav Moshe Weinberger's Haggadah. I have it, but didn't go through it yet. Now, on the Hebrew side, the Piazetzna Rebbe Haggadah is the hot Haggadah on the Hebrew side. The Rebbe of Piazetzna killed in the Holocaust, the Eish Kodesh. Psh, the Eish Kodesh, beautiful thing he says here. He says you should open up your Seder the following way. Look at these words. I just want the words. Kishaba el haSeder, when you come to the Seder, Yitzayir lo ata shehu beGan Eden, conjure up the image that you're standing in Gan Eden. Vahasuda, and the meal is me'ein hasuda shel atid lavo, like it is the suda of Gan Eden of the future when we're going to take part in the Leviathan. That way, the Piazetzna Rebbe sets the tone. Imagine setting the tone at your Seder. This is not another meal. This is not just another get together. We're not just going to do some rituals here. This is big. We are going to be standing right now in the footsteps of the Garden of Eden before we experience this idea. Okay, let's continue along in our Haggadah. This one, you know, I also crowdsourced for this year. So my good friend in New York, I want to give a shout out to Avery Newmark, if you're listening in. Avery Newmark sent me this Dvar Torah that caught his eye. They've been printing lately the teachings of Rav Meir of Premishlan. You can Google him. He shows up in Karlbach stories and other places. Rabbi Meir of Premishlan. He looks at sort of, again, that Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpat. He looks at that order and he says, that order is what God is asking of you. This is beautiful. Listen to this one. Kadesh, holiness. You want to be holy? What do you got to do? Urchatz, wash off the junk. Commit, you're going to get rid of the garbage. Whatever it is that you're doing in your life, you're going to stop. Urchatz. Then Karpas. What's Karpas? Kar is a pillow. Pas in Aramaic, pas is bread. You can look at Bechoros 43b. So a pillow and bread. Give somebody a place to sleep. Give somebody a place to eat. Right? Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. Break your food in half. Share it with others. Make sure there's enough for other people to have. Then Magid. Now you're ready to tell your story. You understand that? Only once you begin to recognize the whole reason for holiness is so that you could share with other people. You could do a favor for another person. Now you got the point of the story. Which ties into always my classic, one of my favorite Divrei Torah, from the Bava of a Rebbe. Why do you break the matzah before Magid, before telling the story? Because everyone has to recognize that they don't have the whole story. You only have a piece of the story. And as soon as you recognize that you only have a piece of the story, you're able to hear somebody else's narrative as well. Many sources you could tie into that. Ayin Sham, the new Brené Brown book, amazing, on joining other people's narrative. Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Angela Lansbury only had half the spell of executionary locomotion. She needed the other half. There's plenty to say on this Dvar Torah, but let's continue ahead. Okay, the only one of the list of the Seder that has a Vav before it is Urchatz. Why is there a Vav, like and? Kadesh, Urchatz. And why is that there? So, the idea from the Leiv Simcha, the Ger Rebbe, the Leiv Simcha shares the following idea. He says that in general, we always start with the sur meira, getting rid of the negative. Right? We usually start with cleansing ourselves of the negative. But on Passover night, God skipped all of that. He passed over all that. He didn't need us to cleanse ourselves. You are perfect just the way you are. God started with the Kadesh. Now that you recognize that God accepts you the way you are, that you always have that full grace, Urchatz, Verachatz, now it's time to start back from the beginning. Let's do the stuff we normally do. Let's wash off. Let's go one step at a time. That's from the Lev Simcha. That on this night, by the way, it ties into Rav Tzvi Kluger. Rav Tzvi Kluger says, why did God, everybody knows, that God waited to the 49th level of impurity before pulling us out of Egypt. Why did God wait so long? God, why did God wait so long? Says Rav Tzvi Kluger, so that we should never say that God only took us out because we were good at that, or we did this well, or he liked us because of this. We had nothing. We had no merits. God chose you simply because he loves you and chose you. And you could say that in every generation, because you'll always have something. Yeah, but that generation was greater. God took them out of Egypt just because. Skip ahead a little bit to a new Haggadah that came out this year, also a great one. The Rav Moshe Sternbuch Haggadah. This is a great insight. You know, we have the paragraph in the Haggadah that goes, Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu. In the beginning, our forefathers worshipped idolatry. Why are we throwing out our family's laundry in public here at the Pesach Seder? Why are you mentioning what they did? Why do you got to say, Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu? That's what they did. So he says like this. Yeah, he was giving a talk in Johannesburg. And he said in Johannesburg is a lot of people who are Balei Tshuva, people who have returned to Judaism. And there's an insecurity that Balei Tshuva carry with them. They feel bad that they're not FFB, they're not from birth. You know, it's the opposite. The FFBs are insecure that they're not like the Balei Tshuva. They're not on fire like the Balei Tshuva. But the Balei Tshuva are insecure. They have this past behind them, this sack of reptiles that's in their past, and they're embarrassed about it. So he got up to speak, Rav Sternbuch, and he says, this part of the Haggadah is for you. At the beginning, our forefathers worshipped idols. Va'achshav keravnu lifnei amakum. And now, we're close as anything to God. Meaning you shouldn't have to worry about what happened in your past. You always have the option of coming close to God. And with this, he has an inference that is so good. Listen to this Dvar Torah. Yitro, remember Moshe's father-in-law, was a pagan priest. Pagan priest, farthest you can get from God. Vayishma Yitro. Yitro heard, and he became Jewish. He became religious. What did he hear? Rashi says he heard about Har Sinai, Shama Uba. He heard about Har Sinai and he came. I always thought that meant he heard about the great values of Har Sinai and said, I want in on this. Nope, says Rav Sternbuch. He heard that these people who were the biggest lowlives 49 days ago, who were in Egypt doing idolatry, doing God knows what, lack of identity, had nothing, literally days later were able to come out and receive the Torah. Were able to receive the Torah after that. That is the message of the Haggadah. Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah is there to teach you that within days, God doesn't need a lifetime for you to change your life. Yeshua Hashem Keherafayin. God changes in the blink of an eye. You just need a moment and you could be able to turn around. Karpas, this one comes from the Alexander Rebbe, the Yismach Yisrael of Alexander. The Alexander Rebbe says, Karpas is a vegetable which is hidden entirely in the dirt. All you see is a little bit of leaves sticking out. And yet one day, someone's going to pull that out of the ground and it's going to show up on our Feast of Kings. It's going to show up on our Feast of Kings. Isn't that the story of our people? God saw just a little spark in us, just something so small, a people who were in the dirt. But God saw something in us. Me'afar kumi, from the dirt we have risen and we have climbed up. The story of our people over and over, when people count us out, but just that little bit left. Od me'at ve'ein ish. A little bit and there's nothing left. That was enough to take us into the next stage of our story. Let's move along. Let's move ahead. We now go to the new Rav Moshe Weinberger Haggadah as one of the featured Haggadahs of the year that I mentioned here. So he quotes Rabbi Nachman. So he says like this. Rabbi Nachman says, hey, by the way, this is on Yachatz, why you break the matzah, which we talked a little bit about. Rabbi Nachman says, how do we supposed to feel when you put in all this effort? Sometimes in life you put an effort. You think about you have a good Rosh Hashanah, maybe you had a good Yom Kippur, or you did a big mitzvah for a neighbor, whatever it is. And at the end of the day, often it doesn't bear fruits. Your work doesn't come out as much as you hoped it would. Rabbi Nachman says a person has to place their trust in Hashem that the seeds they planted will pay itself forward one day. You may not see it now. right? Hazorim bedima. You plant in tears, barina yiktsoru. One day you will harvest in joy. Says Rav Moshe Weinberger, that's why we hide the bigger piece of matzah during the Seder. And we hide it and we bring it out only at the end. Because most of us don't see the results of the good things we've done. It's going to take a while down the line. You know what? You put your foot in your mouth with a friend and you told them they got to get help and they're not talking to you and you think you made a mess of things. Wait. Just wait. Give it some time. Many years later, it may take a long time, but they're going to come around and you'll see that what you did make a difference when you didn't realize that it made that difference. And that's why you put away that other, which reminds me of also one of my favorite Divrei Torah, from the Satmar Rav. So I used to teach a bunch of at-risk high school kids, and one of the kids was sleeping the whole year, wouldn't wake up. He was in the back, he had cereal stuck to his face, and he would not, literally just sitting on the floor. So I wanted to say something that would truly bother him and get him up. So the Satmar Rav says, Dvar Torah, which could really make you angry if you just stop there. The Satmar Rav says, why do you break the matzah before Magid, before you tell the story? He says, because how are you supposed to do a holy thing like telling the story while you still have some of the lousy Jews around? Get rid of them. Get them away from the table. Get them out of here. And then you can have a proper Seder. So I said it on purpose to get a rise out of this guy. The guy went nuts. He woke up finally. And he turned to me. And I remember with tears in his eyes, he said, Rebbe, you're wrong. I said, well, tell me why I'm wrong. He's not true. I go, what's the truth? He goes, you don't get rid of that other half of matzah. You protect it. You guard it. You save it with your life. And you bring it back for the best part of the Seder, which is the Afikoman. Sometimes our brothers and sisters need a little distance. Sometimes they need a little time away. A little step a little outside for a little bit. But you watch over them. You stay in touch with them. And they come back for that part of the Seder, which is the Afikoman. Beautiful. Beautiful Dvar Torah. Beautiful Dvar Torah. Let's continue. My favorite Dvar Torah, my favorite Haggadah of the last 5 years, people have been asking me, of the last 5 years, I have two of them. One of them is the Kajaglov Haggadah. The Kajaglov Haggadah. I have a lot of Haggadahs, Mike. Like you got booze here, I got Haggadahs. Okay? So the Kajaglover's Tzvi Hirsch Fromer, he was with actually the Rebbe of Piazetz, and they were both killed at the same, around similar times. And the sefer he wrote is called Eretz Tzvi of Kajaglov. It's brilliant because it's a great mix of Hasidus and Lumdus. It goes back and forth. So the Kajaglover raises the question on the Halach Ma'anya, right? We get going and say, Halach Ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread that we ate in Egypt. Whoever's hungry, come and eat. So he asks the following question, great question. He says, why do we introduce the food that we have before the guest walks in? It should be Kol Dichvin Yesevi Echol. Whoever's hungry, come and eat. Here we have the bread, here we have the this, here we have that. We're doing it opposite. We say, here's the bread, and then we invite the person in. So he answers the following. He says, the whole point of the lechem oni, of the matzah that you have, is to know at the end of the day that you rely on God. No matter who you are, no matter what level you're at, no matter how well you do, at the end of the day, you rely on God. So before you bring anybody into your home, before you think you're on your high horse, and I'm going to have a meal for that guy that's got nothing, and he's had such a tough run, I got him at my house. You're just as dependent on God as that person is. You need the lechemoni. You need the lesson of halach manya. Once you get it, then you can invite your guests in your home, and you automatically understand them. There's almost an inverse Dvar Torah in that from the Maril Tzuntz. The Maril Tzuntz. Who's the Maril Tzuntz? If you look online, there's a disproportionate amount of his books published on the laws of Shechita. He was afraid that nobody would ever use his book on Shechita, so he made a promise to save them a spot in the world to come if they publish his book on Shechita. So you have all these people who published Maril Tzuntz on Shechita. So the Maril Tzuntz says the following. He says the opposite. He goes, why at the end of the day are you telling the guy, he just came into your house, and you say to him, look, I got some poor bread for you. That's not the way you treat a guest. Right, his question's a little different. Right? Why do you say, here's some poor, that's for you, some poor bread. No, you're telling him, look what I have. I'm just like you. I also eat crow. I also suffer. It may look like I have everything here. Trust me, I have my own pekala. I have my own thing going on in my life. I also have lechemoni. Let's sit down and eat together. Cry over it. Let's talk over what's going on in our lives and share that bond together. So the two in the last 5 years was the Kajaglover Haggadah, and my other one is, I sent a divan, a goose chase looking for it tonight, is the Sifte Kohen Haggadah by Rav Dov Cook. Very hard to get. Okay, Rav Dov Cook, the tzaddik who's living underground, literally in Tveria. And he has a great question. He says, this paragraph of Mahalach Ma'anya is written in Aramaic, which means it's after the temple was destroyed. If it's after the temple was destroyed, why do we then say the words, Kol Ditzrich Yese V'Yivsach, whoever needs, come and join us on the Korban Pesach, on the Paschal offering. There's no Paschal offering. The Mikdash was destroyed. The paragraph's in Aramaic, right? It's, the Mikdash is no longer there. What are you offering someone something you don't have? He says something so beautiful. This is amazing. We know the base of Mikdash was destroyed because of sinas chinam, hatred of other people, brother turning against brother. The way you're going to fix it, as Rav Kook famously said, is through avas chinam, through giving love even when someone doesn't deserve it. Avas chinam, just loving the other. When you turn and say that line, whoever is hungry, come and eat, kol dichven yesev yechol, Rav Kook says in that moment, our aspiration is that the Beis HaMikdash goes right back up. And that's why you could turn and say, whoever kol ditzrich yesev yivsach. Isn't that beautiful? Kol dichven yesev yechol. We hope with that one line, we were able to like, it's like, I don't know what TV show it is, but it's something, Lahavdil, where all of a sudden when you say that one line, the whole script goes all the way back to the beginning. And the Mikdash is suddenly up and you're having the Korban Pesach. Everything gets rewound and you're back again there. And that's what Rav Dov Kook says so beautifully. And Kol Ditzrich Yesev Yisach. Another one from Rav Dov Kook. In all the Haggadahs, it says, if you notice, before the four sons and the Avadim Ayinu, it says, Kan HaBen Shoel. Here, the son, Kan HaBen Shoel, here the son is supposed to ask. So it's interesting that the printer sort of left that line in every Haggadah as like a traditional throwback. Kan HaBen Shoel. It's in all the Haggadah. So says Rav Dov Kook, lines don't enter into our liturgy by accident. There must be a deeper meaning why we've held on to it. He says beautifully. He says like this. The whole year round, God is what you call a shomer sachar, a paid guardian. A paid guardian is you pay someone and they'll watch you. God says, quid pro quo here. You do my mitzvahs, I'll take care of you. Follow my law, I'll take care of you. Shomer sachar. On this night, we become a shoel, a borrower. There, where God is chayiv on onsen, God is responsible even for things, everything. God is responsible, fully responsible, when he's a borrower. And that's what we're saying. Kan HaBen Shoel, here the son, here we, your children, we've turned into borrowers. We're responsible to each other now. We've created a relationship of shoel, of being a shoel and not a shomer sachar, where we're obligated and responsible to each other. Great new Haggadah, you kids from last year. You can go on Amazon, The Four Sons Haggadah, by Rabbi Alan Schwartz from OZ on the Upper West Side. He had such a great idea. I don't know why no one thought of it until him. The idea was to take the four children at the Seder and recognize the whole Haggadah can be understood on four layers. You could take every line of the Haggadah and recognize that it's addressing each one of the four children. So watch one of these examples. It's incredible. So the way he understands the children are the wise son, the cynical son. Russia's cynical. He's not there killing people. He's cynical. He's angry, questioning, what do I got to do this? What do I got to do that? The pure son, because Tom means pure. And then the withdrawn son, Einu Yodea Lishol, who doesn't know how to ask. Shein Yodea Lishol means he's withdrawn. He's just, he could care less. Right? Could care less. And it's everybody now with their games, all the kids with their games, they can care less. Right? No one cares anymore. No one cares about it. So the withdrawn is probably the most prevalent now. But anyways, you take those four. So why do we say Avadim Hayinu, the paragraph of Avadim Hayinu? Watch how it plugs in beautifully to all four. For the wise son, Avadim Hayinu is the beginning of a complex discussion of Matchil Bignus, begin in the negative, end in the positive. A theme that he's going to fantastically trace, because he's so wise, he's going to trace throughout the Haggadah. Now the pure son. Why do we begin with Avadim Hayinu? We were slaves. Because the pure son wants to know on a most basic level, God, I'm not a slave to Paro. I want to be a slave to you. I want to serve you. I just want to worship. The simple son, the pure son, just wants to worship. What about the withdrawn child? Not interested. Avadim Hayinu. You know why we're doing that? Because we're going to weave a whole story for that child. We're going to weave a narrative. We're going to bring in posters and we're going to get dressed up. We're going to make this exciting and we're going to take that child out of their withdrawn state and engage them, meet them where they're at, and bring them out. That's why we're talking about Avadim Hayinu, because we're giving you a storyline, a script. And now for the cynical son. Why are you telling me about Avadim Hayinu and all this stuff? You want to be cynical? You want to tell me religion's not for you? You want to say this Judaism thing, it's not for me? At least from a point of gratitude. at least from a point of gratitude. Your family prepared this. We're here. We took care of you. Your grandparents took care of you. Your religion, your culture, we're your family. We're all here for you. At least in terms of gratitude, you got to show up. You got to be present. You got to do something. At least on that level, you could relate. Gratitude, of course, the cynical child relates to. They believe in that. They accept the notion of gratitude and how it's important. And you use that as the springboard for their conversation on Pesach night. That's the Haggadah. That's the Haggadah from Rabbi Alan Schwartz. Everybody loves the part where the five rabbis were in Bnei Brak, and all of a sudden the students had to come in and tell them it's the time for Shema. So one Dvar Torah that I really like that I've said maybe a few years before is how come they didn't know it was the time to wake up in the morning? The Gemara in Chagiga, those who recently did it in Daf Yomi, says that Rabbi Akiva went into the Pardes. He went into the orchard. This deeper metaverse realm that we can't get to. And three other rabbis came with him, and they were destroyed after that. One died, one went blind or out of their mind, and one left Judaism. Rabbi Akiva is the only one who came out unscathed. He knew how to go in and come out. Now, it makes sense why these rabbis came to him on Pesach night. They wanted to go into the orchard with him. They wanted to go into the Pardes. So they joined him that night, because he knows how to come out safely. I think that's why they had no clue what time it was to say Shema, because they weren't here anymore. They were in another world. Right? These rabbis say Shema every day. They don't know the time. That's their one job, is to be in charge of the Zmanim. They didn't know what time it was. They weren't here anymore. They were in another realm, and that's where they were. So that I shared with you in a previous year, but a twist on that I saw from the Rav Dov Kook Haggadah. The line in Tehillim says like this, Laila kiyom ya'ir, the night will shine like day. The night of our redemption will shine like day. So, bayamim ahem bazman hazeh, like it was in those days, so too it is now. For these great rabbis, when they immersed themselves in the Egypt experience, that night shined like day. So to them, they lost track of time because the whole night sky lit up like it did when they left Egypt. Now I'm going to give you one from Rav Meir Soloveitchik. You know Meir Soloveitchik from the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue, from the East Coast. Sali, they call him. He's brilliant. This is a grape shot. This is a grape shot. And here's the question. The way you got to set it up at your Seder is the following way. Five rabbis in Bnei Brak, all of a sudden right afterwards, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, I was like a 70-year-old man, and I never realized that you're supposed to say Mitzrayim at night until Ben Zoma extrapolated a lesson. Okay? That's his famous line. When you think about it, oh, it makes sense, because they were talking all night about the Haggadah, and he didn't realize you're supposed to do Mitzrayim at night. It's actually a non sequitur. That's not what he's talking about. Ben Zoma is talking about something else entirely. It's talking about the law to say Shema every night. You know the law of Shema at night has Vayomer. You're supposed to mention Mitzrayim every night. It's not talking about the Haggadah Pesach night. Everyone knows. Rav Elazar ben Azariah knows. You're supposed to talk about the Haggadah on Pesach night. That idea of Ben Zoma was about Shema the rest of the year. So what's one got to do with the other? That's the question you set up. I love this. This is a historical answer. This is amazing. What's the, or everyone's into origin stories, right? The Joker, everybody else, Morbius. What's the origin story, Lahavdil, of how this happened over here? How do we get to the story of the people sitting around? So here's the origin. Romans sack the temple. Rabbi Gamliel takes a group up to Yavna and starts a new yeshiva, and they're worried, how are they going to keep Judaism centralized with no longer a temple? So Rabbi Gamliel says, I'm going to smack it down. No one's going to defy my edicts. And I will keep the Beis Medrash a place only for the elite. He puts guards by the door. He puts people in Chayrim for arguing with him. He's so difficult that they fire him. They said, you're done. He had the pedigree, he had the wealth, he had everything you need for the position of Nasi. They threw him out. They needed somebody else like that. So they found a young rabbi. His name was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And they said, do you want the job? He turned and did the one thing, very smart thing. He said, what's a smart answer when someone says that? Check with my wife. Excellent. He said, let me check with my wife. He goes to his wife and she has two problems. Number one, they could do the same thing to you like they did to Gamliel. You know that. He goes, I'm aware, but we can mitigate. Fine. Number two, you're so young. You look like a baby face. That night he went to sleep and he grew the gray beard, and that's Harei Ani Keben Shimshon. That's the background to this story. So here he is. He shows up to this Seder. By the way, Rabbi Gamliel's not at the Seder. You ever wonder Rabbi Gamliel's not here? It's awkward. Why is it? That's the guy who just fired, and now he's nowhere to be seen. So He goes to the Seder of, why don't they come to him? Why does he go to Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva is the Gadol Hador. He's the greatest Torah scholar of the generation. By the way, why isn't Rabbi Akiva the head of the yeshiva? Because Rabbi Akiva does not have the family pedigree. He converted in. He doesn't have the clout the same way. He's just knowledgeable. For a position of Nasi, you need someone from a certain background. So they go to Rabbi Akiva. They're sitting there. Here comes his first litmus test. The gauntlet is going to be thrown down. Why? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is of the opinion that the Korban Pesach is to end at midnight. Rabbi Akiva believes it goes the whole night. Now these rabbis are talking and talking and talking. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah looks at his watch. If he opens up his mouth and says, we stop at midnight, they're going to throw him out like they threw out Rabbi Gamliel. Too authoritarian. If he says nothing, then he's an impotent leader and can't do anything. And what's the point of his position? So what does he do? Right? Part of great leadership is being able to have, emotional intelligence. He did something brilliant. He says, we're in Rabbi Akiva's house. Let Rabbi Akiva lead the show. I'll sit along. He let Rabbi Akiva lead the show. The students walk in and they're aghast to see that their Rebbe, who just gave them a shiur 2 weeks ago about stopping at midnight, is still going. The students come in, and he turns to his students and said, no. The reason I was still talking tonight was not because of Haggadah. It was because of the other obligation. Every night, you're supposed to talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's part of the Shema. There's no time limit on that. That you can go the whole night. So that's what I kept doing. But me, we stopped and stopped the Haggadah at midnight. We stopped the Korban Pesach at midnight. And by the way, that really is the Halacha. The Halacha actually is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and his emotional acumen that night actually won the day. That's Rav Meir Soloveitchik. Okay, let's continue along. We got to move ahead here. All right. The new Haggadah that came out, also great. The Novominsker Haggadah, if you want an English Haggadah. The Haggadah of Novominsk. So, first of all, this is on Vihi She'amda. Vihi She'amda, right? We say, and it has stood for us. What has stood for us? Right? Vihi She'amda, what has stood for us? Nice little pshat, by the way. This I heard from Rabbi Meir May. Rabbi Meir May said, Vihi She'amda is, translate the word Vihi literally, and she. She has stood for us. The Nashim Tzidkanios, the great women along the generations, they're the ones who have stood for our, they have made sure that we upheld their identity all of these years. That's Vihi She'amda. That's Rabbi Meir. So anyways, the Novominsker Rebbe says, when I taught a group of ninth graders, I realized something. I asked them what Vihi She'amda is, and nobody knew. Meaning what he meant is, and he explains this, is everybody had 75 fancy Divrei Torah, but no one really just knew what the words mean. Just, what is it? Simple. What is it? Oh, because Vav is 6 and the Yud is that. What is Vihi? What is it? The answer to this question, and I believe this should be stressed, is that Sipur, recounting Yetzias Mitzrayim, is an unbroken chain, a continuation of all the generations back to Mitzrayim. That's Vihi She'amda. What has stood for us is this chain, is this Mesorah, is this tradition that has been passed down from generation. That stands for us. When people wonder, what are we resting on? It's all the generations that came before us. Which reminds me of a Dvar Torah I heard from Rav Knopfler, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in Manchester University. Yes, related to Dire Straits. Rav Knopfler says the following, beautiful Dvar Torah. He says, why do we say, right? Why don't we say, B'chol dor v'dor, in every generation, Chayav Adam Lira says Atzmo, a person is obligated to see themselves as though they left Egypt. Say, B'chol Shana v'shana, each and every year. What do you mean, B'chol dor v'dor, every generation? No, the way you read it is, how do we see ourselves as though we're leaving Egypt? Not in isolation. We do it, B'chol dor v'dor, with every generation that has come before us. All those who walked the path before us to get us this day, that's how we stand today in Egypt. Because we carry with them, whether their DNA, whether their values, or whatever it is, we bring it with them to the Seder. It's beautiful, Rav Knopfler's twist on that one. We say in the Haggadah, and this is when it gets dry in the Haggadah, this is where you got to bring out your divrei. People blow all the divrei Torah at the beginning. I say, stall it. Wait to hear. While people are getting a little antsy, this might be where you bring some of them out. So the Haggadah begins this section called Tsei Ulamad. Go out and learn, right? Tsei Ulamad. Go out and learn. Go out. What do you mean go out and learn? So I had a theory a month ago about women's learning. It's a little bit radical about women's learning. About why the Gemara, for those who don't know it, I'm going to say something here that might be offensive. The Gemara in Sota tells us that whoever teaches their daughter Torah, it's though they taught them Tiflus. Now, everybody tries to find a nice way to translate that word. I'll say it straight. It means something like lightheadedness or silliness. So what do you do with that? How do you explain that to somebody? We teach women now learn, we teach our daughters Torah, we learn Rambam, everybody's learning at whatever level they're learning at a very high level. So what do you do with that? This is my theory. In the time of the Gemara and in ancient civilizations, the woman's role was confined to the spaces around the home. she never experienced the universe out there in the same relative amount or quantity as a man would. The man would go out. He'd leave for days on end. You see Gemara Gittin. He'd leave for day Medina Sayam. He'd go overseas, come back months later. He saw the world. The only way to understand Torah is if you've seen something out there. How do I know that? Why do you think people use a mushal about chariots and horse and buck? Why need a mushal? Just teach me the idea. Why do you got to give me a mushal ever? Because sometimes the only way to understand the Torah is to have a context that's outside the Torah that sheds light on it. Without that, we can't understand some parts of the Torah. You need to step out so you could see in. I had it, you know, my son's bar mitzvah, a Breslov chassid showed up. And I introduced myself to him. He crashed. I said, "What's your name?" He introduced me. And he said to me, you know, I asked him, "Do you read The Lost Princess?" I love Rabbi Nachman's Lost Princess. The story is an amazing story. I said to him, "Have you read The Lost Princess?" So he said, "Of course." He goes, "Let me tell you something, an insight onto The Lost Princess." I'm like, "Tell me." So anybody who's read The Lost Princess knows the opening line's a funny line. It starts with, "Bederech siparti maisa," on the way I told the story. And whoever heard it had thoughts of tshuva. Why does Rabbi Nachman start with that preamble? Just tell the story. On the way I told the story. So the guy I met, the Breslov Chassid, told me that he's a Cordon Bleu chef. I'm like, "Oh, it's amazing." He goes, "I'll tell you why I'm telling you this. When I became a Cordon Bleu chef, my father asked me to make him a Shabbos dinner. So he sat down, and there's my father, an Eastern European Jew, and I made him a seared tilapia, you know, done two ways, and I gave it to him. And he looks down and goes, "Where's the fish?" Why? To my father, the only fish he's ever known is gefilte fish. There's nothing else besides gefilte fish. I saw the world and saw there's more than just gefilte fish. That's what Rabbi Nachman meant. Bederech siparti maisa. On the way through the world, I was able to collect my thoughts and see things in a way that could bring people to tshuva. That's why women's learning has shifted. They're no longer in the same space. They've seen the world, just like men. And therefore, they have a seat at the table, so to speak, in the sense that they now can understand the Torah at the highest levels. Because it wasn't an intrinsic problem, it was a societal problem. Now I believe we have the pshat in tse ulamad. You want to learn the Haggadah? You want to learn well? Tse. Go out. Go out. Get out for a minute. Go outside. See what's happening on the streets. See what's happening in the world. See what's out there. Then you can come back in and properly learn. Right? Mushal to a baseball player. Home plate means nothing till they leave home and come back again the next time around. It doesn't mean anything beforehand. It only means something when you leave. Tse. Then ulama, then you can come around, and then we're able to learn. Okay, let's move ahead. Let's keep going. Give myself a headache. What time is it? Okay, we have a few more. Okay, I'm not keeping track of the number, but it's okay. There's a great Haggadah that came out called Haggadah Ha'atid, the Haggadah of the future, where every Dvar Torah is connected to the future, all the future. It anchors every concept in the future. So, for example, what's this whole debate about how many plagues? How many plagues did the Egyptians really go to at the sea? Was it 10? Was it 30? Was it 40? Who cares? Who cares? Says the forward-facing Haggadah, Haggadah Ha'atid. There's a pasuk in Micha, which says, Ki meitzeisecha me'eretz Mitzrayim, erenu niflos. Like the days when you have left Egypt, you will once again see wonders. So the Tanaim wanted us to already anticipate the future Geula, the future redemption. They wanted us to already start thinking about how magnificent and powerful will be God's wonders to bring down those who are bringing such evil into the world. Will it be 10? Will it be 30? Meaning, his point is, if it's just looking back at whether there were 10 or 30 back then, it already happened. Who cares? There either was or there wasn't. But when you're anticipating a future where God will stand up and make a point of bringing justice into this world, then yes, I do want to know what's happening. Dayenu, famous question in Dayenu. What does it mean that if God had brought us to Sinai, but not given us the Torah, Dayenu? Everybody and their cousin asked that question, right? And the famous answer is like being in a perfume shop. Even if you don't buy anything, you still smell good, right? That's the famous answer. Rav Shaul Alter has a... Who's Rav Shaul Alter? Rav Shaul Alter is the Gera Rosh Yeshiva. He's the hottest thing right now. He's hotter than apple pie. So Rav Shaul Alter says like this. He says, there's a Gemara in Shabbos. Again, the question is, what does it mean if God had brought us to Sinai, but not have given us the Torah, it would have been enough, right? It wouldn't have been enough. Would it have been enough, right, Hamilton? Would have been enough? Wouldn't have been enough. So says Rav Shaul Alter. The Gemara in Shabbos 88b says, Kol dibor v'dibor sheyotze mepi HaKadosh Baruch Hu chozru Yisrael achareim shneim asar mil. With every word that came out of God's mouth, the Jews stepped back 12 mil. They were like forced back from the force of God's word at Har Sinai. 12 meal is already a separate domain. You're another city. So with every one of God's words, the people, so to speak, were pushed further back. He says, that's the Dayenu. If he wouldn't have given us the Torah, we may have been missing out on the purpose of life and why we're here, but at least we would have still been right next to you, God. Ilu keravnu, right? That's because it says, keravnu lifnei arsina, you brought us close. That's the Dayenu. The relationship already would have been enough. The lesson in the end is you can't truly carve out a relationship until you truly begin to, again, it ties into the other thing, until you leave, until you say, until you get out, and then you can come back, and then you're able to come back again. Okay, let's continue. Here we go. Rav Simcha Bunim of Peshischa, one of the great Hasidic masters, one of my favorites. The legend has it, Rav Simcha Bunim of Peshischa, when he was younger, used to do outreach and bring people in through poker tournaments. Hey, enough has been written on this. You do enough research, look up for it. Rav Simcha Bunim Peshischa used to show up at poker matches and use that to collect his winnings. And he poured a bigger cup of wine one year for his Rebbe, the Kotzker Rebbe. And he said, his mind is bigger, so he needs a bigger cup. Okay? That's a famous line for those who have Simcha Bunim Peshischa books on their shelf. What does that mean? So, I don't know if anybody here has met the Amshin of a Rebbe. The Amshin of a Rebbe is very unique. He's known as one of those Rebbe, who's a Wunder Rebbe, who knows things about people's futures and all that kind of stuff. When you see him, his beard splits into two. Lahavdil, like Dumbledore. And it's like eerie when you see him. Like another world. So the Amshinover said, I meditated on that line of Rav Simcha Bunim on the Kotzker, about the cup. And I think I know what it means. And this is what the Amshinover's explanation of Rav Simcha Bunim's reason for pouring a bigger cup for the Kotzker. Again, the line is, his mind is bigger, so he needs a bigger cup. We know that the four cups that we drink, according to the Yerushalmi, are parallel to the four expressions of redemption in the Bible. There are four expressions of redemption. Now, right now, the Geula is so hidden from us. We don't see it. And even though there's a magnificent process that's unfolding, we don't recognize it. The Gemara in Sanhedrin 38a says, Nichnas Yayin, Yatza Sod. Wine goes in, secrets come out. Wine goes in, secrets come out. Therefore, we're hoping by drinking the four cups of wine that with each drink, we reveal a little more of that which is hidden about this redemption. So says the Amshinover, the more expansive a mind, the more secrets the Kotzker is holding. His student, Rav Simcha Bunim Peshischa, was saying, with a mind that powerful, I got to do more to draw it out and hope he slips this night and gives us a little bit about the mysteries of the universe. Okay, everybody's favorite, the Munkach Haggadah just came out this year. Okay, the new Munkach Haggadah is now in stores. So this one is from the Munkacher. So we know according to the Mishnah and Rosh Hashanah that on Pesach we are judged for the grains of the year, the produce. On Pesach we're judged how much tvua. So says the Munkacher. It's famous from Rav Pinchas Koritzer. Rav Pinchas Koritzer was the famous student of the Baal Shem Tov. He was known for always speaking truth, never exaggeration, anything. Rav Pinchas Koritzer quotes the Gemara in Erevin where it says, whoever chases after kavod, kavod runs away from them. You chase after honor. Honor always, you see this, people always chasing honor, they're the people who get it the least. It runs away for them. Someone who runs away from honor, honor chases you. Honor tries to find you. So Rav Pinchas Koritzer says that's a rule for the universe. If you chase Olam Hazeh, in the end it ends up running away. If you just want to spend, you want to have money, in the end it'll just go away. So when we have matzah, this is great, when we have matzah has no taste. We're essentially running away from food. On Pesach night, we are running away from quality gashmias by serving matzah, tasteless food. Therefore, on Pesach, God says, since you're running away from the food, Rav Pinchas Koritzer says, that's why on Pesach is the time that I give you your tefuah. That's when I give you your grain. It's the best time of year for God to give it to us because that's the time we're running away from it. And based on this principle, that's when the stuff comes to you and that's why it sticks to you. So says the Munkacher, he adds, now that's the sequence. Motzi matzah, maror korech. Via the eating, matzah, maror korach. By eating the matzah and maror, which is tasteless and bitter, We then get to the Shulchan Aruch. We then get to the meal. You want to have the meal in your life? Strip yourself of it, and then you get to it. And that's Halach Ma'anya. This is the poor man's bread? Kol Dechva Yisrael. It's great. Now the order, it answers the other question. Why do we say this poor man's bread first? Once you go to the poor man's bread, God says, I'll make sure you have enough to invite other people at your meal. When you keep it simple in your life, I'll make sure you'll be able to take care of other people. Okay, we're coming to a close. We're coming to a close. Here we go. This is from an American poet, Mary Jane Oliver, amazing poet. Listen to this poem. People do it, some out of desperation, others out of greed. They steal. The very powerful and clever might steal a whole house or $1 million. It's been done. But what does it matter? Love is the only thing the heart craves, and love is the only thing that you can't steal. I think that's a beautiful poem to me in setting up the lesson of stealing the afikoman. The lesson of the stealing the afikoman is at the end of the day, the best you can get for it may be a toy or a couple gifts. But the things that are really valuable in life, which were the conversations at the table tonight, the connections that were made at the Pesach Seder, the relationships that were formed, those are things that you can never steal. Love is the one thing that the heart really craves, and love is the one thing you can't steal. That itself is the afikoman. I want to close with, let's do one more for the night. I always like closing with the, I need two more. I need Eliyahu. I've got Eliyahu Navi. So they just put out a translation of the famous Shomer Emunim. The Shomer Emunim was an 18th century introduction to Kabbalah by Rav Yosef Ergas. So I was leafing through it, just looking through this new book. I want to thank the Caspers for buying me a copy. And it says in there that Arizal merited to have Eliyahu reveal himself to him and teach the Arizal how to resolve disputes the way Eliyahu Navi resolves disputes. What do you mean Eliyahu Navi resolves disputes? Who knows about that, right? Every time the Gemara doesn't have an answer and it's stuck, we say the words teku, that Eliyahu HaNavi is going to be the one to answer the resolution, to answer the conflicts. So what does Eliyahu represent? He represents a person who could solve the conflicts when you don't have answers. I want to suggest that maybe that's why we open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi at the end of our Seder. This night, you were told to ask 100 questions. We encouraged the children to ask questions. You think we had an answer to everything? We didn't have an answer. We did our best, but we didn't have an answer to everything. So who are we going to invite to our Seder? The one guy who's there when you can't answer all the questions, Eliyahu Navi. And that's how we open up the Seder for him. I close with this one. We say, Lashana Haba Yerushalayim. This time next year, we should be in Jerusalem. The problem with that is, though, Ein boinim beis hamikdash b'Shabbos and Yontif. You can't build a beis hamikdash, a temple, on Shabbos and Yontif, the Gemara tells. The halacha, you can't build it. So, Shana Haba b'Yerushalayim, we're asking that we turn and build the beis hamikdash next year. What are we asking? Why are we saying it at this Seder? Pesach night is not about our work. Pesach night is God reached out and we deserve nothing. He did it. The third beis hamikdash, and this is what I heard from my daughter Esti Einhorn, the third beis hamikdash is not going to be built by us. It's going to come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu bringing it down to earth based on His love for us. And we're not going to have to do any maisa on Shabbos and Yontif. So too, Pesach Seder, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, just show up. Just come in through the door. Just be here. I'll take care of the rest. I got it from here. Have a good Yontif, everybody. Chag Sameach. Shkoyach, Mike, once again. Thank you so much. Thank you.